companies have something within 9 months. Okay, now that's a triumph of American ingenuity, and half of these companies aren't American, but it's also a triumph that somebody was working on this before. And the thought of the Pfizer copyright having anything to do with the first guy in a lab, wherever the hell he was, who said we could do it this way, I don't buy that for a second, Lou. I mean, it's not like I want to screw Pfizer. I don't. You know, and I surely don't want the manufacturing part, which is the big thing, like you're saying. How do you go from having a solution to have a 100 million doses in 6 months? That's a big deal, obviously. And it's probably a bigger deal than the invention of the thing in the first place. So yeah, I'm with you on this. I can't ever get my arms around what exactly, who did what and who deserves what in one of these deals. Am I just being inept?
Well, okay. So I think your hang up, as usual, is a moral one, in the sense that, you know, you're trying to find out something that's fair as opposed to something that you know exists within the legal, you know, the legal framework of how we make these things and how we protect the value of them. Being the person who actually discovers something, and being the person who actually and being the entity that is actually able to produce it are two different things.
Well, or register it. I'm more worried about that. The producing part, I'm with you on that.
But that's part of, Chief, that's part of producing it. I mean, if you can't get it protected, if you develop something but you can't get it protected, you don't have the wherewithal to put it, you know, put the legal protections around it so that you can manufacture it. Then who cares?
Well, if I find out, for instance, sort of like the was it Google or one of those big tech firms, that virtually, I won't say all, but an awful lot of the original research was done by Stanford. Stanford didn't get any part of the patents. It was all government contracts, but why not? I mean, if in fact it turns out that a lot of this is done Baylor or a lot down there. If in fact 90% of the development of whatever this technology was, the MTS, what they call it, the technology for this thing, was done under government research grants to, you know, Duke University, I'm not exactly sure if Pfizer was the first person to make it to the patent office that they deserve all of it. I mean, it's been like, just like it's been like that for 150 years doesn't mean it's right. I mean, we know who did it.
But you know how this works.
I mean, I know.
If you're the,
I don't like it. I know it. I know how it works.
No. I know. But if you're the company that puts the missing piece of the puzzle in, the fact that you can put the missing piece of the puzzle in and solve the puzzle means you basically own it, because until you come along, it's just a puzzle.
Well, here's what I don't want, Lou, and I see it. Here's what I don't want, and I see it all along. That the people that I paid at Duke to do it, now all of a sudden they're working at Pfizer, and Pfizer's got the patent. And I'm a citizen. It looks to me like I'm paying twice. And it just bothers the hell out of me, because it happens all the time. It's once in a while, just throw me a bone. Once in a while, you know, say let's do something fair. Just once. And one out of ten, I'd be happy.
Well, but again, this is the hang up that you frequently have when we talk about these kinds of issues. And that is that this is somehow unfair, that this company, which has invested megabucks in the ability to do all of the things. See, this goes back to the fight that you and I always have, not a fight, but a discussion you and I always have over the regulatory state. So the more regulations that are imposed, the more laws that are imposed, the more requirements that are imposed at a federal or state level on something like this, the less likely it is that the mad scientist sitting in her lab can benefit from a discovery that she makes individually.
By the way, we never argue about that. I'm always with you on that.
Yeah, even if she's the sole person who develops or imagines this vaccine or this breakthrough, to get it to market, to be able to make money off it, is a completely different operation and requires the kind of huge structure that you have with Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Moderna, whoever.
To a degree, Lou, and you pay for that. I mean, to a degree, I don't. This is the part I struggle with, and everybody, the listeners know that I'm not trying to be dictatorial here, because I just struggle with it. I don't know that I'm going to say Bristol-Myers has to be a certain size to do that. I think Squibb had to be a certain size to do that. I don't think you let them get together when they're both... They're, at some level, you need some kind of competition. And if any if somebody gets to steal the mad scientist stuff, let everybody steal it. Don't be the first person to the patent office get it for 17 years. Let everybody steal it. Don't have a door that if you get your ass in the door first, you all of a sudden get 17 years of pure avarice. I have no problem with Pfizer being a huge company because they took penicillin and produced it when nobody else could. Back when people were dying of everything on earth and lopping people's legs off for a gangrene, right? So I got no problem with Pfizer getting rolling. But at some point, your chairman doesn't develop much. He just sits around and looks and sees what other people have and finds a way to get them into the patent office. Let's get rid of the patent office, Lou, is all I'm saying. If that's the way it's come down to, let's get rid of it.
Then in that case, nobody develops anything.
I don't know about that. People still will. I was looking to, actually a couple of companies, we don't do this at PTI, but it just so happens, I knew somebody who was looking for some help, and they had some kind of a scientific instrument, I won't say what it is, because people could find it on Google, and I said, do you have any patents on this? And the lady goes, why would we want that? The minute you go to the patent office with something new, somebody steals it. If they're bigger than you, they end up with it. She goes, the patent office is the biggest joke on earth. Well, if it is, let's get rid of it. It's been that way since day one. I mean, Kodak got its start by stealing Brown Camera Company's patent. The Brownie, the Instamatic was not a Kodak development, it was Brown Camera, and they stole it. I mean, I don't think Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone, and they stole it. So, I mean, we'll go to break here a little, and we'll fight this when we come back. SP Futures up 450, NASDAQ Futures up 26. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Will Michaels, Mr. Dave Scantino on the board. S&P futures up 350, NASDAQ futures up 24, 25, and Lou is correct. My quest for fairness is a tough thing, David. Why would you want to be? You don't want to be fair. You want to be fair for you, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So that ball was a foot outside, and I'm the batter. Hey, that's a good call. That's a good call. Dow futures up 39. Oh God. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 5. Call that flat. FTSE up 11. 0.1%. Not quite flat. CAC around, however, up one. That's a for sure flat. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei up 5.18. That's 1.8%. These guys, they just reopened. They were closed this last Friday. Shanghai down 5, and they just reopened 2.1%. Hang Seng up 2.19. They've been open the whole way. That's 0.8%. So a little confusing there who's been open and who's been closed. Just a way of review. Yesterday, the Dow was up 97.3%. S&P up 2. Pretty flat. And NASDAQ was down 51. So we're constantly getting this NASDAQ stuff down. The rest of the things up here. Bonds. 10-year note down 131 basis point, not a 32nd. 1.57. The Bund minus a basis point, minus 0.24. Japan positive 0.09. UK positive 0.81. Oil, down a little bit today. It's been up like every single day. Only down 35 cents, still 65.28. Brent down 32 cents, 68.64. Natural gas unchanged, 294. RBOB down a penny at 213. Gold, which has been rallying, is rallying again today. Up 750, 1791. Sneaking ever closer to that 1800 number, which it hasn't been for a while. Silver up 29 cents. That's over 1%. That's a lot. Copper up 3 cents, 455. And palladium down 34 bucks. First time that's been down in quite a while. Crypto, Bitcoin up 677. 57,946. Creeping back, pretty steadily from that, I think it was a 48,000 low, last week. So it's continuing to come back here. Maybe we have worse traffic, weather, sports. Everybody's pissed off at Tony La Russa.
Yeah, they are this morning. We'll get that to him in a minute. Good morning. It's 6:35 in Chicago. Currently, the weather is 48 degrees and cloudy. Today's high will be 49. A little rain and some clouds with some showers this afternoon. For our Phoenix listeners, it's 74 and clear. It's going to hit 100 today in Phoenix. 100 and sunny. Traffic, we have our usual backups on 55 and 94 exit. A couple of accidents to report. There's a jackknife semi on I-80 east before Shepley Road. Congestion stop and go. Expect delays of about an hour. There's also an accident on I-290 west before 171. Stop and go traffic, there are delays there too. In sports, the Kings beat the Coyotes 4-2, eliminating them from playoffs. The Hawks, who were eliminated earlier this week, take on the Hurricanes tonight.
So you're playing like the best team in hockey three times in a row, you're ass kicked.
Yeah, so both our Phoenix listeners and Hawks listeners have no playoff hockey this year. In the NBA, the Suns drop under the Hawks 135-103, and the Bulls take Charlotte on tonight, hoping to stop a four-game slide. In the MLB, the Cubs beat the Dodgers 6-5 in extra innings in the 11th. Sox lose 1-0 in extra innings. La Russa admits not knowing the extra inning rules would probably cost them the game. And the Diamondbacks lose to the Marlins 8-0. Back to you.
Lou, I have a question for you on the baseball and David.
Can you let me know what rule a big league manager was unaware of?
Oh, I think it's unacceptable.
Well, Lou,
what did he drop?
Funny you should mention that. I get this question and error thing all the time on my internet. I don't know how I got on this list. You should have seen these guys arguing. Under today's rules, it's possible to pitch a perfect game and lose. No, you wouldn't necessarily have that on the tip of your tongue, would you? Neither would David, but it's possible.
No, and I didn't.
I think I understand how it's possible. What was the rule that Tony La Russa screwed up?
The same thing is when you, well, David, I'm sorry, I'm talking first here, but after I asked David to research it, but normally, if you end up, in the, if you go to the 10th inning, you start the inning with a man on second.
Yes, that is correct.
Yes.
Ah, okay, got it.
And you're supposed to put the last out there. Sort of like in softball, if you're too fat to run, or you claim you got a bad leg, and I get a single and I get a courtesy runner, it's supposed to be the last out that runs, not the fastest guy in the team. So it's essentially a softball rule. They put it in baseball to stop these extra inning games from going too long. So, but evidently, if you're an American League team playing in a National League park, which meaning you're not using the designated hitter, evidently you. Go ahead, David. You don't have to use the pitcher as the last out.
Correct.
So La Russa put the pitcher out there.
Right, he put the pitcher on base.
And evidently somebody got a hit, and the pitcher didn't score, and everybody's whining that somebody else would have scored. Now, do you get to put anybody else out there, and then what, could he have played before, David, or not? Probably, not if he's already out, you couldn't put him out there.
Well, I think the pitcher ended up on third.
And then
they tried to have a guy steal second to end the inning, and they just said he's been a disaster. He's made some pretty bad decisions for the Sox for the first 29 games of the year.
Even though the Sox are doing incredibly well, and everybody seems to like him.
Yeah, without their two best hitters.
So when La Russa, this is what I don't understand. When La Russa says, let's put the pitcher out on second base.
He thought he had to.
Nobody on his... Pardon me?
He thought he had to, because the pitcher made the last out the inning before.
When he does it, it's obviously a bad decision. Nobody on his staff. There's nobody else in the dugout that says, "Wait a minute, why are we doing this?"
Lou, that's what they were complaining about this morning on the radio, that they didn't have anybody to tell him. That, you know, I mean, he hasn't managed in 10 years. There are new rules, but he has no one on the staff to say, "Hey, you made the wrong decision." No one said a word.
But if you wanted him, if you wanted him to say you scored, and you wanted him to pitch the next inning, I think you have to put him out there. Right?
I'm not Tom. I'm not 100% sure of this new rule.
There's no way you're gonna pull the guy and then have him re-enter the game the next inning. That can't happen.
I'm gonna double check that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think maybe that's the rule, but so all right. How can you lose a game if you pitch a perfect game, Lou?
Well, you can have somebody reach base on an error, right?
No, that's not a perfect game.
Oh, if you walk somebody, that's not a perfect game.
No. Under the new rules,
I've heard it's possible. How do you lose
under the new rules? If you start the 10th inning with a guy on second base, first guy up hits a ground ball to second, he's out at first, the next guy out up hits a fly ball to the left, and the guy scores. You lose 1-0. And nobody reached.
Yeah, okay.
Nobody reached base. Nobody reached first base. Perfect game. There's nothing you could have done.
Yeah, we'll see if that happens this year.
Well, you know it will someday.
You know that's going to happen eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a game last night where a guy was one pitch, threw a wild pitch to lose his perfect game. I wanted to look that one up too. I heard that this morning.
Well, how'd the guy get on? The guy got on first. It must have been strike three.
Well, they won the game, but he lost his perfect game bid, you know, because he threw a wild pitch. Yeah.
Okay, so it must have been on strike three. It dropped third.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, Lou, I mean, just I don't get like you're criticizing the current administration, and I got to roll with you on this one. Do we really think that there's a factory someplace somewhere that's capable of starting to produce these things in massive quantities? All he needs the formula. I mean, where would that be? I mean,
oh no, I mean that's the issue, and that's one of the issues. I mean, if I'm the manufacturer. I'm saying to myself, okay, I see where this is going to go, because what they're trying to do, the ultimate goal is to give this stuff away for free. Okay? That's the ultimate goal. So they're to force us to give it away for free. So once we get the formula given away that we developed and we patented and did our thing on, and let's not make any mistakes. They spent, even if it was developed by some other intellectual property operation, these companies spent gazillions to get it perfected and get it put into bottles and get it registered and everything else.
Yeah.
Tested.
Yeah. We could go.
So
we go through the numbers there in a second. Go ahead.
Well, but I think they look at that and they say, you know, we've put this huge investment out, so we're going to lose that in intellectual property. But when that doesn't work, when we don't see a flood of free vaccine going out all over the world, then the next thing that's going to happen is they're going to come to us and say, okay, you got to give up your manufacturing technology. And that's, but as I said, that giving up the keys to part of the kingdom is bad enough. Giving up the keys to the whole kingdom is unacceptable. And that's one of the reasons they'll do it. And Chief, let's also be honest. If we turn this technology loose, you know what's going to happen. It's not going to be the IP loose. It's not going to be offered for free. The vaccine's not going to be offered for free.
Well, nothing's ever
to
free.
All these people around the world.
Nothing's ever
they're
free.
Their governments are going to be working to make megabucks off it.
Right. From what I know, let's take this from the top. From what I know, and I have congratulated the Trump administration for this deal since day one. I mean, I thought it was genius. I guess it's happened before, not in my knowledge base, but what they did, Lou, is there were, I believe, seven companies. I've still got it buried somewhere. I probably sent it to you. It's probably somewhere in your email. There were seven companies that essentially had an interest in coming forth with these vaccines. So what our government did, somebody in the Trump administration negotiated this deal. If you were a company like Moderna, and I'm not sure about AstraZeneca, if you wanted money from the government to help develop, they essentially wrote you a check for $500 million, thereabouts. $520 million, somewhere was a negotiated number. And we, the government, also contracted for all these people to start making doses. $100 million apiece was roughly the number. Some were a little more, some were a little less. And they said, look, start making the stuff even before you're approved, so that if it's approved on Thanksgiving Day, by Sunday, we're putting shots in people's arms. And that was the deal to seven places. So when the guy from Pfizer gets up there and says, okay, we didn't take a dime, it's not exactly true, because the people who didn't take the money, the price per shot, everybody came out to be the same number. So the $100 million, if you took the 100 million doses, if you took the 500 million, you essentially got $12 a shot, $12-13 a shot. Okay, so you got the 500 million plus 100 million times 12, so you ended up with whatever that comes out to, like a billion, whatever that comes out, like $2 billion. All right, if you said, we'll produce it ourselves, then they paid you like $18 a shot. It came out to the same number. So for Pfizer to say, we didn't take a dime, bull bleep. He didn't take the dime, but he got $5 more a shot times 100 million. He ended up with the same number. All right, this is, I was reading this in Business Week or whatever it was, or Bloomberg, 6 months ago. We talked about this on the show. And I thought it was genius then. So basically, we're down to a number that's $11 or $12 a shot, which is about as close to free as you're ever going to get on a shot for anything, I think, in that business. So how exactly, and by the way, I'm agreeing with you, I'm just moving your logic along here a little bit. Why the hell don't we, since we have places now that are spitting it out pretty fast, why don't we either just buy it for these guys at $10 a throw or 12 and ship it overseas, or let them pay us $5 and maybe we'll eat half of it, whatever, just because we don't want people, rest of the world, having it either. Or if somebody actually does have a plant somewhere that could actually start producing it, we'll just license it to them at $5 a shot and that type of thing. What is the need for what they're doing at all? There's 10 different ways to do this to get you to the same place that make more sense to me. Or where am I wrong here?
So again, the regulatory structure drives the availability and drives the production here. We can't just willy-nilly throw, notwithstanding what you think, Joe, based on Joe Biden's press conferences about and speeches about spending money. We can't just willy-nilly throw money at this thing. There has to be an appropriation, and it has to be done according to a statute to send this money towards the vaccine.
Yeah, except
to send it overseas.
Except, except at this point, 100 million shots at $11 a throw is a pimple on the ass of an elephant, and all the other stuff.
It doesn't matter.
I understand
it. It doesn't matter. You can't just wave the magic wand. And I guarantee you, there will be some resistance to that in Congress. If people remember when this was originally set up, when Warp Speed was originally set up, they specifically wrote into the contracts, you can't use this for anything other than U.S. domestic consumption.
Those dosages, but the next 100 million that Pfizer does, there's no encumbrance on it. I mean, I guess what I'm saying, Lou, if you wanted to, we could lend the money to India. They can pay us like we do if we're selling a Boeing plane, for God's sake. It's the same price. I mean,
theoretically, yes. Again, that has to be some kind of legislation, enabling legislation to support that. And I'm, you know, in the era of dictatorial presidential decrees, nobody's really interested in the hard work of getting this thing through Congress.
Right.
And I would say that if you put something like that out there and said, look, let's give, you know, $1 billion to India to buy whatever, however many doses of these vaccines that get you.
That would get you 100 million doses, roughly.
I mean, my immediate reaction as a congressman would be, why not have India stroke a check for that?
Well, and maybe we could. But I'm saying, because we're not talking about $1,000 a dose. We're talking like 10 or 11 bucks. I mean, for God's sake, a Viagra pill was 45. I mean, we can do this, Lou. We can help people out here. And who says that India's unwilling to pay? Maybe they aren't.
I don't know. I don't see the Indian government. Have you seen the Indian government even make a request to us?
No, I did read this, however, in my little coronavirus hotline that I get. If somebody writes in from Bosnia, of all places, how come everybody else that's got vaccines is doing really well, and Bosnia is doing not so well? Turns out Bosnia is using Russian and Chinese vaccines. Do we really want that?
What a surprise.
I mean, what are we doing? And do we want people traveling to Bosnia when they're using Russian vaccines? I mean, come on. I mean,
first of all, I don't really worry about the Bosnian tourist industry.
No, but I'm saying if you and I, Lou, it's not about you and I can argue about this forever, and I think it's good radio that we do because we bring out all the different points, and not so much. I'm not arguing with you as Lou. I'm trying to find out all kinds of different ways to do it. It's not about which one of us wins. It's about educating people, including ourselves, or me for sure. So to me, this thing that came out of the Biden administration, either it's a first negotiating ploy or something. It just seems like a really dumb way to start to me. I mean, there's all kinds of different ways of doing this, and we're talking about something that's 10 bucks a shot. It's not like it's a chemotherapy drug, for God's sake.
Let's go back to, you know, sort of basic principles here. Has India formally asked?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, how would we know?
To give us the vaccine.
I have no idea. How would we know?
Well, I mean, that's something that Modi would do publicly. I mean, or he'd pick the phone up and call Biden and say, look, we need some help here. I'm unaware, and I mean, that would get some publicity, I would think. I'm unaware of any...
I heard something along those lines. I thought I heard the Indian ambassador here sending a formal note. I thought I heard that, but please don't take that to the bank. It's like,
well,
I thought I heard something along those lines.
I know that we've delivered hospital supplies to them directly using Air Force military aircraft. We've delivered hospital supplies to them directly. I don't know what condition that was done under or what basis that was done under, whether that was some kind of emergency humanitarian relief or something like that. But I mean, there are all, again, the regulatory state, there are all kinds of restrictions on moving something like this to a foreign country, especially when we have, again, production contracts that say you can't move this stuff out.
I think a lot of it had to do with oxygen. The request last week, I think, had a lot to do with oxygen. I think.
Yes.
That's what
they shipped.
I didn't mean to jump in, but that's what happened. India did come out a week ago and ask for help from the world, and most of it, the United States promised to provide oxygen and other vaccine manufacturing, personal protective equipment, rapid testing supplies, along with the UK also sent a bunch of that. But as far as the vaccine, I don't see any of that.
No, I haven't seen any requests for the vaccine. So you know, and I don't know. India's vaccination numbers don't look good. Looking at their infection rates, they actually look comparable to, or at least initially looked comparable to U.S. rates in terms of the people that we're getting. You know, this percentage of the population is getting really sick, and the problem is their healthcare system is obviously not able to handle those numbers. And you're talking about, because of their huge population, they're what, five times bigger than we are.
Lou, I hope nobody's eating breakfast, but we do know from various studies we've heard that it is you need sanitary conditions to stop it. And we're talking about a country where 50% of the people poop outside every day. It can't be helping. That can't be helping. I'm just saying it can't be helping.
There was a whole, I mean, again, we'll ruin everybody's breakfast. There was a whole discussion early on about fecal transmission of this stuff.
If you wanted to find out if it was in a college dorm, all you had to do was test the plumbing.
That's exactly right, and that was, you know, and that was one of the big things about hand washing, especially after this news came out. But I think the emergency relief stuff that we shipped there was something we could do immediately at the stroke of a pen under our humanitarian, you know, relief laws. I think the vaccine's a different ballgame, and I mean I think this is something that would have to be worked. It could be worked quickly, but it would have to be worked at a very high level, and then even I think a flow down through Congress to get some kind of enabling legislation enacted. If in fact it meant we were buying the vaccine for India, or that we were going to allow them to buy it.
Well, Louis, there's a certain, I mean, I think you and I and David obviously has piled in here with good stuff, by the way, David. There's what we always seem to be, no matter who's in charge since we've been doing the show. So we've been from Obama to Trump to this guy Biden, and now we seem like we're incredulous, like it once a month. I just, what are they thinking? What are they doing? all three guys. Is it just me? I mean, when this thing came out yesterday, I immediately had like 50 questions popped into my feeble brain. And if I was smarter, it'd probably be 100. Wait a minute. What are we going to do? We're going to ship them the formula? We're going to ship them the machines? We're going to, I mean, what are we doing here? What does that even mean? Who researched this? I mean, is it just me, or does everything seem like it's half-assed thought out that we're hearing in the last 10 years, or what? Or is it just me?
Well, no, I mean, we talk about this all the time. We talk about why obvious solutions or what look like facially obvious solutions get rejected. And I can tell you, having done, you know, business overseas and in Europe and in Russia and a few other places, that nothing like this is as simple as simply as getting up and saying, look, this is a good idea, let's do it. It just doesn't work that way. We have too many regulatory checks and balances built in and that are designed to make it difficult and to make sure that significant number of federal agencies get their fingers in the pie to make sure that everything's been blessed before it goes out and nobody's rice bowl gets emptied too quickly. And that's why it takes a while to do something like this. I mean, I don't, first of all, as I said, I'm unaware of any official request for vaccine from India, but maybe that was included in their general request for aid. But we have limitations on this vaccine that prevent us from just shipping it out. Could they buy it and be reimbursed? Yeah, but that takes an appropriating act. So there you are. You know, where's the will to deal with this? I don't know. It looks like there's a will to help because we got the oxygen tanks and other protective equipment over there immediately. I think that we're looking at a legal regime or a legal regimen around the vaccine that prevents us from doing this specific thing.
Well, what do you think it makes of the companies? And we don't have time to talk about it. I was going to talk a little bit about this Peloton situation. It is interesting that when you look at the Pfizer's and the Johnson & Johnson's of the world, I mean, Pfizer especially, I mean, this can't be more than, I mean, at the original price, unless after the original deal the price has gone up, which could very well be. I don't know that, and David maybe could find that, but the original deal was, you know, these guys were going to get, you know, pick a number, $1 billion, $2 billion worth of revenue out of these vaccines, and I thought maybe the most they could get in terms of profit was, you know, say it was $2 billion was the revenue, they might get $1 billion, which has to be the least, you know, markup stuff in their whole arsenal, these drug companies. I think the place, the last time I looked, Louis, $52 billion a year in revenue. So, I mean, it's, in terms of PR and in terms of getting the guy on TV and in terms of helping people, it might be one of the best things they're doing. But in terms of money, it's a pimp on the ass of an elephant for the company, at least the last time I looked. Now, if they get to charge Indy and these other places, you know, $50 a shot, well, then now that's a different program. I don't know if they have to keep the same price that the Trump's guys come up for going forward. You know, I don't know if they can all of a sudden start charging 3 and 4 or 5 times as much. Maybe they can. But, I mean, it seems to me that even these stock prices are moving around in such a tremendous amount that nobody seems to know these numbers. Is it just me?
I think you're seeing, with the stock prices anyway, I think you're seeing the uncertainty that exists in a market that has been so totally dominated by political issues, and that is subject to the whims of, you know, whoever in the Biden administration happens to wake up in a bad mood or a good mood that morning.
Well,
and,
yeah.
And so the volatility is a reflection of the fact that I think nobody really knows how these drugs are going to be marketed and sold over the next 5 to 10 years. I mean, this is going to be one of those things, I think, like a flu shot, eventually, yeah, that you're supposed to get every year. And, you know, there's a huge potential revenue stream on that. But so, okay, COVID's not like the flu. Who's going to pay for that? How's that going to be funded?
Well,
are we going to see the intellectual property protections waived in another year?
Well, if it's 10 bucks a shot,
the benefit from this disappears.
If it's 10 bucks a shot, we should pull out the sawbuck and give it to the guy giving it a shot, right? But that's the simplest way to do it. Instead of having some program. I was reading last night that Moderna has, I think it's Moderna, don't quote me on it, well, that has now a one they've tried, it is a third time booster shot against all the new variants, and evidently it's working splendidly. Well, if that's true, that's really good news, isn't it? Or is it everybody getting, yeah, so jaded that, I mean, if that's true, that means like September, October, everybody goes and grabs that thing, and what's the big deal?
Right. And so eventually I think we're going to see a move towards some kind of rational risk assessment on this stuff with the vaccine. We're not there yet, and I'm horrified that we're inoculating children with this stuff. I have lots of suspicions about vaccines and their impact. Which doesn't mean that I don't think people in my age group and gender should take the shot. I think you should. But there's no intelligent risk assessment on this that basically will stabilize the demand for vaccine at a certain level as we figure out, okay, not figure out, but we finally impress upon people, look, if you're female under the age of 50, you probably shouldn't get this shot if you want to have kids or you don't want any, female specific effects to occur from this, because the risk weighing is so one-sided. But if you're over the age of 60, you should get the thing. And eventually that's gonna stabilize out. Right now it's not. Right now you've got the president saying it's patriotic to wear a mask and get a vaccine. I think that's a very dangerous message overall.
Sure it is. Sure it is. It's a, and you know, as somebody who had it and fortunately came through without much trouble, the idea of the people who've had it have the exact same antibodies as the people with the vaccine have never been thrown a bone through this whole thing. I mean, what's to say tomorrow that I try and go to a ball game and they say, well, you don't have a measles vaccine? I said, well, what do I need a measles vaccine for? I had it. We're not believing you. How do we know? How do we know you're not telling me to, you know? Anyway, Lou, good stuff, buddy. Talk at you next week. Have a nice weekend. SP Futures up 5 now, and NASDAQ Futures up 22. Be right back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR. Innovation in Human Resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Dave Scatino on the board. SP Futures up 475, NASDAQ Futures up 23. It's an interesting trade in the last couple of days, especially with the dip in the drug companies yesterday. You know, this morning we got Moderna's down $10 on their earnings, so which had, and they were down yesterday with some of the stuff happening with the allegedly trying to give intellectual properties of these vaccines, just kind of give them away to people. I don't see how the hell that works out, as we've been talking about so far. But with Mr. Dan, we're going to talk more about the markets. Dan, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Hey, I had some people calling in, and some of my clients, and saying, hey, if Dan were to put together, I know he's talking about the container place, and he still likes the chicken soup for the soul. If he had to do two of these preferreds today, which would he still recommend? Because obviously prices have moved a lot since he's been on the show. And I said, I will ask him. I will ask
him. No, absolutely. Actually, those two I would still be in. In fact, Blue Knight just reported earnings. They had a really good quarter. They continue to have sort of favorable tailwinds based on the, you know, infrastructure bill, and they're not really you know, like some other businesses in their industry who are more you know, manufacturers and producers and distributors. They store asphalt, so they're not impacted by higher prices. So they, you know, all the way around, it's things are looking good for them. They've also paid down debt. They've continued to pay out a really high dividend. Stock is, you know, dividend rate is still close to 9%.
What's the symbol?
Same with Chicken Soup for the Soul.
What are the symbols?
You know, it's a video on demand business. Continue to get really good product and good talent, and they're you know, it's kind of a steady eddy, and that's sort of what I've said about both of these names. We have good sized positions in them. Still really like them. And then I guess finally the REIT that we prefer, which is SELF, SELF, which is a public storage REIT, that is still paying like in excess of 6%, and it's trading at 5 now. You know, we started buying it at
you know, below four. There's a few other names here and there. I mean, a couple of our infrastructure names pay smaller dividends. You know, there's a couple names that we've been in, like Matson, that we had talked about before, the you know, the freight deliverer, the container ship, that have the container ship vessels. U.S. Concrete even pays a small dividend. Federal Signal, which is the Chicago-based company that does vehicles, especially trucks for infrastructure. So there are a few names that are, you know, not really necessarily dividend plays, but the first two, absolutely. You know, I still like them. There's still upside potential there. Preferreds in general, I think, are a good play right now, and if you want to just get exposure to the category, there's a couple of other names like SPFF, the ticker symbol SPFF, higher quality preferred stocks, and then there's EPRF, which is another ETF that is preferred stocks. And I think if you want to just get broad exposure, those are good. But again, you know, my top two picks would still be Blue Knight, BKEPP, and Chicken Soup for the Soul, CSSEP.
CSSEP.
Right.
The first one, BKEPP.
Yes.
We got a lot of letters in these things, Dan. Jeez.
A lot of letters. Yeah. But there's a lot of yield, too. So there's a... You know, this is a good place to be right now. The Treasury market's been a hard place to be, although people have made money recently. You know, with the 10-year now, it was at 157. I mean, it's, you know, you hear all this talk right now, and I'm sure you have as well, just with we're going to see higher rates, we're going to see higher rates. And I think the challenge recently, or the crosswinds that we're hearing, a lot, you know, have a lot to do with inflation and higher rates, and what we're hearing from people like Janet Yellen, which is sort of like some mixed messages, I think, at least just from my point of view, that there's initially this real big push just to keep spending and spending and, you know, more stimulus and all that, and then all of a sudden it's now, well, this could possibly, you know, translate into some inflationary pressures and could possibly translate into higher rates. So that this past week is the first time I actually heard that from her and from some of the others, and no doubt that this could happen. I think it's now become more widespread, this thought that even though CPI is not necessarily picking up what we see as inflation, I kind of was just looking at, you know, look at inflation from two points of view. Look at it from the consumer's point of view. The consumer's paying more in food when they go to the grocery store, paying more in gas when they, you know, gas prices are higher. They're paying more in homes. You know, if they're looking for a new home, home prices are higher right now. And they know they're going to be paying more in taxes, even if it's only a small tax increase to the middle class. They know they're going to be paying more in capital gains taxes. So that's the consumer. Now look at corporations. Corporations are going to be paying higher in taxes. Maybe not as high as 28%, but they're going to get, you know, 25% might be where they come in, but it's still higher. It's still, you know, higher cost for them. They're seeing higher raw material prices. They're seeing higher pricing across the board in pretty much every industry. They're having trouble finding staff. They're looking at higher wages. They're looking at this issue of unemployment that's been skewed by so many people remaining on government-assisted unemployment that are making it difficult for employees to find both skilled and unskilled labor. So we're in the middle of earnings season, and we've been doing a lot of calls with management, and that's what we're hearing across the board. So there's, despite this reluctance to think that there's inflation, there is inflation. It just depends on how you label it, and it could be a problem, and very might well lead to higher rates, and it might well, as Janet Yellen said momentarily, or at least at one point, I'm pretty sure I heard her say this, that we may be forced to raise rates. And so that would mean, you know, that might actually put a little pressure on equities as well. We did have one stock that we heard that might be one that's affected more than some of the others, but it's a asphalt and concrete company that is having, is doing really well, but they are seeing the pricing pressures. They are seeing the pressures in trying to get staff. As they, you know, they have this huge backlog, but they don't have the people or the materials to carry it through yet. So that's, it's an extreme example, but I think that's the direction that we're heading in. And without more attention being focused on, you know, watching the stimulus going forward and watching the, you know, additional spending going forward, and also looking at unemployment and maybe having a way of kind of trying to, you know, leave it just for those who absolutely need it and not just, you know, carry over from, you know, from last year. You know, there are good jobs out there right now. Everyone's hiring.
Well, Dan, it's a
very different environment in a very short period of time.
It is. It's if you look at things, kind of one of the young ladies on CNBC who doesn't usually, well, most of them don't really comment that much on the politics, but one of them was this, I think it was Cynthia Eisner. She, about a couple weeks ago, she goes, "Wait a minute, were we like 4 months ago? No inflation, not now, not ever, not even going to think about it, to maybe a little bit, to maybe transitory, to maybe having to raise rates." She goes, "That's a pretty quick 4 months for government."
Yeah, exactly. So it's when I start hearing it from my companies, you know, from their point of view, because they're really the ones who are down the, you know, the ground. They're the ones who are you know, seeing this on a day-to-day basis, and they're the ones I tend to trust the most, rather than looking at statistics, which actually could include, you know, can be, you know, the statistics themselves can be skewed based on what they include and what they don't include. But when you have your CEOs of all these different companies saying those are their number one concerns, pricing and you know, wage and, you know, finding good staff, that's real.
Well, it's also when you, I don't know what, I suspect from just talking to you, your mom wasn't too big on you lying much. I don't think she was. mine sure wasn't. It's when you start lying, it never ends, Dan. I mean, you have to
right.
keep telling another one to pony up for the one before. And I'm like probably the last guy you'll ever talk to that used to do the inflation adjustments for a major manufacturing firm when I was very young and out of grad school.
Okay.
And right now, I'm going to say, when you were talking about your asphalt company, I immediately, it was like somebody stuck me in the ribs. I know just what probably they're going through, because I'm going to say that they bought asphalt and now they you know, put streets down. I'm not sure that's what they do, but I'm just follow my logic here.
One of the things, yeah.
And they put streets down. And so they're going to say, City of Oak Park, we're going to put down X number of streets, per, you know, how many miles of streets for the next 5 years, and here's the price per linear foot, or whatever the hell they price it. And we're going to have an escalation clause in here, if they're smart. Okay, well, a lot of people probably are too dumb, have not had an issue with inflation in so long where they might not even
right.
have a clause. So now, when you start to lie in your CPI, now your guy or lady at the asphalt place has said, holy bleep, Batman, our cost of asphalt has gone up 15%. I'll bet you that if they have an escalation clause with the City of Oak Park, the City of Oak Park says, we will adjust this thing based on the CPI. Except, wait a minute, our bleeps in Washington are lying on the CPI and have been for 20 years. So they're not helping me at all. My asphalt went up 10% and the CPI is up 1.5%, and they're reluctant to do even that. Or God help you if you're building houses and lumber's up double in 6 months, and now this guy's telling me it's up 1.5%. They're not helping us at all. Now, it's almost right. to the point now where we have to shop. If we were smart, well, it's hard to go back, be smart, and redo a contract. I want to have an oil price index, or I want to use you didn't have to do that 30 years ago, because
right.
the CPI
exactly.
was somewhat honest. Now
yes.
we're not even making a stab at it, right?
No, absolutely, and I totally agree. And I think what benefits us is that our style is to do research. So
right.
we do research on our own, regardless of what the street is saying, what analyst estimates are, or what forecasts are from economists or from the Fed. We're doing our own homework, and I think the best sources are those CEOs that are dealing with this day to day, the ones who are dealing with supply chain issues, the ones who are dealing with inventory issues, the ones who are dealing with the labor issues. So when you hear that story over and over and over again from different companies, you know that it's got to be real. These guys aren't making it up, and they certainly wouldn't be making it up because it's not going to necessarily make them look good. They're just telling them the way it is, and then they're giving us the information. I think because we've had developed good relationships with them, we rely on those sources. We rely also on trade information, information that you get, on industry information, if you will, and not so much on just those numbers that you're going to see, like you're saying, that change and the lie gets deeper and you want to still keep to your story. It's more of a political thing than hey, we just got that wrong, or hey, we're seeing these increases coming that we didn't anticipate. So I totally agree with you on that. And it was, years ago it was more, we relied on that information more, and it seemed like it was a little bit easier to follow. And today, I think a lot of technology and productivity changes have skewed things a little bit, but you still have to be, as an individual, you still have to be able to kind of have your eyes open and see what's going on. And as a corporation, or investing in corporations, you still have to see the pressure that the corporations are
sure.
in this environment. So.
And to be perfectly, it's funny, Dan, it's people, I mean, I don't know, I'm not accusing, but they must have had how many, obviously, I mean, my opinion, not yours, but, a lot of the people on CNBC are so anxious to have, and Fox and the rest of them, are so anxious to have the CEOs on as their guests that they're willing to basically be a lapdog to the extent that they...
Right.
I know it's kind of nasty to say, but I think it's fairly true. And every single time, Ford, I'll just pick them out, or General Motors, or Dan Janitas' hot dog stand raises prices, they're going to say, "Oh man, Dan just couldn't wait another minute because the hot dog guy, he hit him up, and then the bun guy, and then the mustard guy came by." And the simple fact is, most people raise prices because they can't. It has nothing to do. If you're sitting next to Dave Scatina's hot dogs, and somehow or another, Dave doesn't care, and he's charging $4 for a dog, I don't care what your mustard guy does, you can't charge more than $4. But if all of a
right.
sudden somebody, an asteroid lands on Dave's head, and you can all of a sudden charge $6 the next day, you don't even care whether the mustard guy went up or not. The fact is, you went up, right? Because you could. So, I mean, it's not about everybody's being forced and everybody's so philanthropic about this. I mean, right? I mean, the minute you can raise price, you think the soybean guys, all of a sudden they're up to, where's corn? Pushing $6 or whatever it is, a bushel? You think they're up to $6 because all of a sudden the fertilizer went up that much last week? No, because they can. That's the price, right?
Right, no, absolutely. And what happens from an investment point of view, what happens is that if there's an anticipation amongst investors that we are going to see higher pricing, whether it be on the commodity side, the raw material side, or on the labor side, they're going to act in advance, if you will. And so they already are acting, so
sure.
they already are, trying to buy things up at the lowest prices that they possibly can. I mean, we had locally here in Florida, they had a shortage on chlorine because I guess a factory had a fire and lost a lot of it. So all of a sudden they're joking that, I think my pool had a little extra chlorine in it last week. But I think it's just human nature to start, that hoarding mentality, if you will. Start, let's buy now before prices go up. And the same thing actually I think holds for the capital gains tax. So we're kind of in a period coming up that if we do see any increase in capital gains tax in the near term, you're going to see a lot more selling in advance of that. And we're also in those sales months, if you will, the selling months, which are May and June. I always, they say sell in May and go away. Well, it's selling May and June. You have to add June to that. So May and June, if we are going to see some increases this summer, those would, I think, be the times that people are going to say, hey, you know, the market is pretty frothy. Let's take some sales. We don't want to be, you know, we want to be repositioning our portfolios so that we're not being forced to take these sales, you know, once the tax increases hit. So, and even if there's just talk of it, even if nothing's in writing yet and nothing's approved yet, I think that will trigger some of this early selling.
Well, Dan, I got a client who has a buddy, got a guy, right, who either works or owns a lumber, whatever you want to call them. What are the guys that...
Lumber
yard. I mean, not a lumber yard, but who are the guys that saw the wood into boards of lumber mill, yeah. I guess, for lack of a better term.
No, right.
And so they're not selling anything this month because they think the price will be more next month.
Right.
And, you learn this stuff as you go. And, you know, it's one of the most interesting, it's kind of an economic lesson, is that something like some huge percentage of the inventory of all gasoline in the country is in people's tanks of their car, which, you know, makes sense to you. And at most of the time, I've got to remember reading this, that the average tank is 45% full or something. There's going to be knuckleheads like me that always want it full, and there's other people. If it ever gets off E, they think they wasted money, right? But then all of a sudden people think the prices are going up, and if that were to nudge up over the course of a week from, say, the number was 45% to 65%, as everybody, you know, enough people filled up because they thought it was going to go up the next week, the dramatic change that makes in the distribution system of gasoline countrywide and almost the shortage it would create is enough to raise the prices tremendously. And the other way around, if people think it's going, oh man, this gas is going down, I'm not going to buy it this week, it happened to me last Sunday, by the way. I filled up at 3:21 and 2 hours later went back to the same store because I forgot something. It was 3:19. I was pissed. I felt like going in to get my 55 cents from the guy. Hey buddy, where's my 2 cents back? Because I gave the Suburban a pretty long drink. It was 28 gallons. I was on a third of a tank. That's how big of a tank I've got. But, I mean, just those kinds of things. You don't think about it, you know. Withholding something because you think it's... I'll bet you some farmers now are not selling out of their current... If they have anything out of the bin, they're going to hang and wait for a while.
Right, so, let it run up. And I think with investments, you know, when we're looking at investments, we're doing the same thing. I mean, we're buying, like now, people, like I said, are trying to buy before they're, you know, say the capital gains tax hits or before prices go up even further when it comes to certain industries. Or they're trying to sell, you know, before that happens as well. So it's, you know, trying to take the losses now so that you're not going to have to pay those additional sales. So I, you know, one name, for example, that we have is Aztec, A-S-T-E. It's kind of your pure infrastructure bill name. It's roads, construction. They do asphalt and concrete, but they do pretty much anything related to infrastructure building when it comes to roads and bridges. And their stock was down 17% yesterday on earnings that missed, and it's mostly because of these two issues of pricing and labor. And this is a situation where I'd say it was overdone, and this is a buying opportunity today. So that I agree with you that this is happening, and I think it's happening times two, if you will. You know, it ends up happening more than it should. Things move further ahead on one side, and that creates a selling opportunity, and then they fall back on the other side, like with Aztec, and that creates a buying opportunity. So I think that's an area to watch out for in the next few weeks. We're going to see this sort of moving back and forth based on expectations for higher pricing, tighter labor markets, and like you're saying, people holding on a little longer.
Well, Dan, we were the show yesterday. When I first got out of school, but that's what I did for a living for a company. Well, it wasn't all I did at Pullman, but it was part of my job. Trying to figure out that's the thing I, having lived through it, and you did too, hate about inflation. I wouldn't care if it was even. If everybody went to the Fed with a dollar bill and you walked out with a $2 bill, everything would just get adjusted. It'd be like a stock split. Nobody care. But that's not the way it works. But trying to figure out who the winners are versus the losers, clearly the guys that have, I won't say manufactured the shortage, clearly you get whatever you want for a a chip now, right?
I mean,
they've got the PR going, they got everything going, and I got to believe that, you know, Ford, the guy says he's going to lose $1.5 billion. I can't believe that he can't be up $2,000 a pickup truck tomorrow.
Right.
I have people buying.
Yeah.
I'm thinking. But I really wish. And we had a listener tweet in yesterday. Who are the winners and who are the losers? And I'm like, man, I'm not so sure. I mean, I know at Pullman, this is history that I know about. We had 100% clause with the MBTA on the cars that I was financial manager of, and yet when I passed it through the system, the big guys, the seat guys, the truck guys, the air conditioner guys, the guys that provided, you know, the big chunk of the stuff you bought, they were 100%. There were other guys, you know, some of the lighting guys, I think, were 100%. But I mean, the switches and a few other guys, they weren't. And even though the union was 80%. So I'm going to say, even though we screwed up the contract, Pullman was a big winner. We got 100 right. And we probably paid out 70. Now, I'm going to say that all through around, if you could point at places, there's restaurants that can raise their prices 20%, and the stuff coming to them is 15, and they're laughing. There's other people that they're stuck between four other restaurants. They can't raise their prices at all, and they're subject to the same 15. I don't know. I don't know that it's obvious who those people are. I mean, and again, with screwing around with the CPI, I'm not even sure that if you have that kind of a contract, that's helping you out much. So this is, it's real complicated, Dan, at this point, I think. I mean, for me.
Yeah, it is. And it is also trying to understand who may be trying to take advantage of the sort of back to work or back to reopening trade, if you will, and saying, hey, we've anticipated that hotel rates are going to be higher and airline prices are going to be higher, and I'm looking for flights, and saying that this is kind of like absurd. You know, granted, it's the summer coming up, but it's, and there is pent up demand, but there are also, I think, companies that are saying, hey, you know, we can get away with a little bit more in this environment and our costs are a little bit higher. So you're right. I think it does take doing a little homework on these companies to see where, you know, and they could be hurting themselves as well if they're trying to be, you know, I don't want to use the word greedy, but trying to sort of take advantage of this environment. They could be hurting themselves because in the long run, you know, some of these issues will get resolved. And But I think definitely this is the time to be paying attention pretty carefully to what's happening with pricing and labor, and also kind of doing your own homework on not only the companies you're investing in, but some of the research that's coming out on some of the economic variables, especially inflation.
So the guys who, real quick question, your shipping guys, the guys with all the containers, can they run their prices up when the price of oil for the ships goes up, or no?
Yeah, no, they do really well. Yeah, they pass on pricing, so they're very good. They also have really good relationships with the ports, so like those extra costs that are charged because there's been all this traffic, if you will, and like say the port of Long Beach or the Port of Oakland, they have special provisions in place where they're not subject to those increases. So that's their, you know, that was always one of their selling points to me, but they're doing quite well. Yeah, they're doing extremely well right now.
Good. Dan, thank you very much.
Some of our other companies are seeing the issue, so we're hearing from other companies, hey, you know, the only thing that's, you know, we have some supply chain issues here, and the only thing that's causing problems is that we're having trouble getting into our goods into the port because there's a back, you know, there's literally a backup of vessels trying to get in. And then yet we have Matson, who is the company that we've invested in, saying, hey, no, we can get cut right through because we already have our, you know, our designated gates, if you will, you know, the way you would if it was an airplane, and we have our places to go, and by the way, we don't have to pay those increases.
Well, Dan, we got a dash, but just remember, when you go to Costco and buy your paper towel, they're 20 sheets less, I read. As the cashier said, so it's only 20 sheets, what's the difference? That's going to be a huge, down a buck and a half, Nasdaq futures down 10. I tell you what, it was 20 sheets of toilet paper, that can make a big difference at the end of the roll, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
We'll be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. S&P futures now down 175. We went up all morning, but now we're not. NASDAQ futures down 16. Dow futures up 14. Jobless claims total were 498 versus 527 estimate. So I guess it's better. It's still kind of high. Half a million is a lot. Anyway, it's better than the 700 or 800 we were for a while, right, David? DAX down 40.2%. FTSE up 3, call that flat. CAC around down 11.2%, so we're leaking a little bit over in Europe. We weren't earlier. Asia, Nikkei up 518, that's 1.8%. Shanghai, which just reopened. Oh, actually, Nikkei just reopened, too. Shanghai down 5, it's 0.1%. Hang Seng up 2.19. Everyone's been open all week. It's 0.8%. So, again, Asia has been varied pretty much every day among the three places. It's kind of nuts. Yesterday, as a way of review, Dow was up 97. S&P up 2, NASDAQ cover was down 51. So NASDAQ's been taking a hit. Bonds, unchanged at 1.58, the 10-year. Bund, pretty much unchanged at minus 0.23. Japan, unchanged at positive 0.10. UK, unchanged at positive 8.1. So, again, not much going on in the bond patch. Oil patch, same thing, down 63 cents, 65 hours even. Brent down 56 cents, 68.40. Natural gas down a penny, 292. Arbob up, down 2 cents, 213. And we've got gold is up 1089 now, getting real close to 1800, 1795. Silver up 35 cents, 2687. Copper up 4 cents, 456. Well, we better do a crypto. Bitcoin up 556, 57,824. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports, bud?
736 in Chicago. Weather today currently is 48 and cloudy. Not going to be much higher. Maybe we'll get to 50. We got some rain. Clouds will come in, and it's going to rain again today. Phoenix, 74 and clear. They're going to hit 100 degrees today and sunny. Traffic's kind of getting messy. There's the slowdowns The normal slowdowns have really gotten bad due to the long-term road construction on the Kennedy and the Eisenhower. Also, the heavy traffic on 55 North right at the Ryan exit. I-80's been kind of smash-up today. There's a crash cleanup. Left lane is blocked. I-80 West before I-55, exit 126 and Ridge Road. In sports, the NHL, the Kings beat the Coyotes 4-2 to eliminate them from the playoffs. The Hawks were off. They take on the Hurricanes tonight. Also have been eliminated from the playoffs this week. In the NBA, the Suns drop under the Hawks 135-103. And the Bulls take on Charlotte, trying to stop a four-game slide. In Major League Baseball, Cubs beat the Dodgers in extra innings 6-5 in the 11th. The Sox lose 1-0 in extra innings. And Tony La Russa gaffe admits to not knowing the extra inning rule, which Tom, the extra inning rule is if the pitcher's up to bat, you go to the guy prior to him. But he did not do that. He left the pitcher on base.
Well, was the pitcher faster than the other guy? Obviously not.
It was Abreu, but at least Abreu knows he... They said he's on the Hendricks is his name. He's only been on base one time in his life.
I bet he's as fast as Abreu.
Right?
God, just saying. Well, I mean, if you didn't have to, talk radio is dying to find things like that, right? To find, just saying.
Oh, absolutely. They destroyed him this morning. I'm sure they're going to do it all day.
Yeah. Anyway, we have John.
John, we do not have yet, so...
Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about agriculture, corn and soybeans here. Why don't you...
Yeah, I'll give him a shot.
We have not talked about about some of the agricultural stuff lately, but we haven't. Corn's up to $7 a bushel. Talk about inflation is kind of crazy. I mean, we don't normally see that, and it's been creeping. And we got gold up to $17.95, and just as a, I mean, I'm sure as hell I'm not about to give any investment advice like, you know, sell this, don't sell that, because it's not what I do, certainly in the air, and I really don't even like to do it. I like to do stuff for my clients in such a way where we're protected and things like that. I really don't like to. The last thing you want is somebody dropping 15 names in front of you and saying, geez, just want to buy or sell. What do you think? I mean, boy, oh boy. It's, I mean, it just makes it. It's a rough conversation, because if you knew all that, this would be an awful lot easier. But I'm looking at this Peloton situation, and the stock has been really getting clobbered. It's the PTON is the name of the stock, and let me get the graph up here. But the stock has been getting clobbered, and they took all the. I think we have Jan here in a second. But we took the treadmills off the market, and the market cap. I don't know how the hell some kid allegedly got killed from a Peloton. How that happens? Neither one of you mavens have a clue as to how this kid got killed by the Peloton.
No, I do not either.
Hey, but John, how are you? I sort of didn't want to imagine any treadmill. I mean, stuff can happen. I've seen people, you know, come flying off them in the club, and I was on one night, and somebody kicked a cord out. That wasn't so hot either. But I'm saying it turns out there's been I don't know anything about the injuries, but turns out now they've essentially had a recall on all of them, and blah blah blah. I don't know if you're familiar at all with the story, John. You probably know more than me. But what I wanted to dig into is when we talk about stock prices. And we talk about market levels and, you know, corrections, and if a stock that goes from 0 to 500 and goes down to 498, you're going to have, you know, five blithering idiots say it's on sale because it's down $2, which may very well be true, or it may be what do you got in your mind type of thing. But I'm just looking. There's an article here, and I'll give you who the author is. Lauren Thomas, and she did a real nice job on this, in my opinion. Peloton stock sheds $4 billion in market value in one day over its treadmill debacle. Well, evidently, they have other machines other than treadmills. Is that the... You guys have to educate me this as we go. Isn't the story on Peloton that you're essentially competing against other people, and there's a screen there, and you can buy routes all over the world, and you'll be doing a bike trip?
Yeah, routines, exercise routines that are directed to you, or give the appearance of being directed to you on a monitor, and tailored to you, and you're kind of locked in a virtual reality sort of atmosphere. So it's a way of tuning out everything around you, I think.
So I'm not driving through traffic in Lincoln Park trying to not get killed. I'm driving on a Hawaii road somewhere, type of thing.
Right. Or a trainer is yelling right in your face.
Faster, faster, you.
Probably more likely, right?
Faster, faster, you schlump.
Where'd you get that outfit?
Yeah, where'd you get that outfit? For God's sake, did it used to fit? Anyway, there's the headlines, Miss Lady. Decline filed, the company reversing its initial decision and issuing a voluntary recall of all its treadmills. Now, again, I don't know how this kid got killed, but since March 18, Peloton's stock cap has shed $7.4 billion. That was the day Peloton CEO John Foley revealed that an accident involving a Peloton treadmill had resulted in the child's death. Now, I don't know if the tread came on, who knows? I mean, I know nothing. But the interesting part is since March 18th, the market cap has shed $7.1 billion. Now, these are the facts, Joe Friday, just the facts, man. But the interesting part is, what should this thing be when you talk about whether or not... Now, the stock was a huge winner in 2020 with the COVID. Shares surged more than 400% for the year. Peloton's market value peaked in mid-January. Guess where? Now, I'm gonna say... Their best year revenue by far was 2020. Revenue was $1.8 billion, up from $915 the year before. So they essentially doubled in 1 year. So revenue is $1.9 billion. I'm sure if I dug deeper here, I don't know what their earnings were, but obviously not $1.8 billion. So the revenue is $1.8 billion. What do you suppose their market cap got to last year? Just a guess. $49 billion. So 27 times revenue. Or something along those lines. And their best year ever. A breakout year whenever we had to stay home. When they probably couldn't make any more of the damn things.
Right.
I'm not, if COVID lasts for another 10 years, which I really... who knows? Maybe I'll buy one of the darn things. Where do you think this could possibly go? I mean, if we had another year like this, could it make it to $3 billion? Maybe, 2.5, 4, 5. Just say 5. They raised the price. They doubled the prices. Let's say 5. We're still 10 times. I mean, now, yesterday, all I heard was, it's down $7.1 billion from the $49. It's got to be a steal. In whose mind? I'm not saying you shouldn't buy it. Who knows? I think it might go right back up because I've seen that now for how many years. But what do you think? What do you think the valuation of this thing ought to be, John or David? I mean, it seems like I wouldn't be paying $49 billion for something that had $1.8 billion in revenue on a breakout year when everybody had to stay home. I mean, for God's sake, what do we think is going to happen here?
They're just crazy numbers.
Yeah.
Detached from reality.
Well, back in 1999, near the end of that year, 2000, right before we got to 2000, I did stupid stuff even when I was younger. I actually went through John and David. I don't know why, because Dr. J and I were, I think we were on the score a long time ago. But I did a little something for the show, and I took like the top 15, 20 stocks, all right, that were, the ones that were the Ciscos of the world, the Oracles, and there were like 20 that were, there were four or five that were 48% of the QQQ, just like they are now. They were the fangs of the day. They were... Yeah, David, what were they? It was Oracle, Microsoft, Dell. Was it Cisco? And what the hell was the other one? Or there was another one in there.
No, you had...
there were five. I'm going to say Microsoft's the only one that's back over its original, its price back then. So Microsoft, Oracle, Cisco, Dell, and whatever the fifth one was. Intel. was the fifth one. And they were like now. They were the fangs of their day. So I basically took those five stacks and another 15 more. This must have been a real rainy Saturday, nothing else to do. And I went through and just said, okay, what does the revenue have to be for these guys to essentially, I mean, I assumed everybody's right, I'm wrong, they're going to grow into their stock price. Like this Peloton, right? The thing's worth $49 billion. David and Jan and me, we're from the South Side, all of us. Now, what does that mean? At some point, if I'm going to say $49 billion for a place, you better be making $4 billion, right? And you better be sending me a check for, like, two. It's somewhere along the line here if I'm paying $49. I mean, that's just investing 101. At some point, you're going to start making some money. And, oh, by the way, sending me a check if you want me to ink one to you for $49 billion, which is a little more than I could ink. So I went through and I just said, okay, these guys have to, their income and their revenue, what would it even have to be? So if their revenue right now is 10% on the $1.8 billion, I'm going to say their revenue is going to have to be $60 billion to send me that check. Well, right now it's 1.8. So they're going to have to go up like 30 times. So I went through all the stacks. I think I might have quit after 10. What does their revenue have to be at their current margin to send me a dividend check that's anywhere near normal? And it turns out, I think I went through, guys, and I think the GDP of the country had to like triple for the top 20 stocks to do that. It just couldn't happen at those prices. Now, does that mean I bought a whole bunch of puts the next day and after 2000, I bought up Monaco and I've been hanging around with Grace Kelly's daughters? No. I mean, I didn't do that. Sometimes you look at these numbers and you need to once in a while just to get some kind of an idea of what am I doing here? I mean, I'm buying this stock not just because I think it's a nice treadmill and I think people are going to start doing some stuff from home. I need this thing to, like, not even, like, quintuple in size just to get me a chance of a whisker of a dividend or something along those lines. I mean, I think you need – it doesn't mean you don't want to buy it. It doesn't mean you want to sell it. It doesn't mean any of that stuff. It just means that you should have somewhat of an idea. I mean, what do I think needs to happen here? I mean, I bought a home I bought a six flat for $6 million. Well, what do they make per year? $5. Okay. I mean, where does the rent have to go for me to get, some kind of return on my $6 million? I mean, I want to get like, 7% or 6%. So how do I get 360 grand out of this place? And the answer is you don't. I mean, at some point you just got to ask yourself the question, because it's your money you're investing. And at some point you got to say, well, am I ever going to make any money on this? And if the answer is no, you might want to say, gee, I don't know about this one type of thing. It's kind of a
random. Another issue too, Tom, as part of that, is what can these numbers really mean if they are so vulnerable to one well-publicized accident?
Oh, yeah.
That everything can collapse so quickly. It makes me think that this can't be the only incident like this.
No, it's not. There were a bunch. Bunch of complaints, but I don't know how you get. I mean,
Tom, they had. I read that the 6-year-old child got pulled underneath the treadmill, and there's been 40 other injuries that is attributed to this problem that they're having.
Well, a regular treadmill, if you leave the thing on at your house and you got kids, I can't imagine how dangerous that is.
Well, it will kill any pet that wanders near it. It will remain any adult too if you're not careful.
So I
just think that there's something manufactured or manipulated in the news coverage for high profile accidents like this, because it's masking many, probably thousands of similar accidents.
Well, yeah. Hey, Jan, we got you. I did want to. Did you spot? We only have a little less than 10 minutes. Did you spot the court decision yesterday that said the CDC, whoever it was, overstepped their boundaries by saying you can't kick people out of their apartments? Did you spot that yesterday?
I did. I didn't need a story. I just saw a headline about it.
What? It's kind of coming on the heels, since we were talking about other stuff Monday that I think was more important. I read some estimate last weekend of just in Chicago, everybody decides, what is it, June 30th, that the, whatever the law is, you can't
boot people. Moratorium on rent, whatever.
Yeah, the thousands and thousands of people that are potentially out, now some huge percentage of people are behind on their rent. What do you think happens there? Are we going to boot everybody out? Are we going to have to start getting land war fights underneath these bridges or what?
Well, they're going to have to hire a lot of sheriff's deputies.
Yeah.
There'll be a lot of work for the forcible detainer at the circuit court to make that happen. And the confusion that will happen with all of this happening in such a short time frame. Because, within 30 days, there's going to be an explosion of these things. It's going to cause an upheaval in the rental market, too. I can't say what it's going to do to rent, although I suspect it's going to drag them up, not down. But I think that the impact this will have on the homeless population and on social services and charitable services, whatever, is huge. And it's not something we had to worry about in 2020. So we're going to have to worry about it now.
Well, John, what is the procedure? I have people that actually I do manage something, so it's there's somebody in there, and even though they may be working, maybe not working, maybe getting unemployment, but they see this, hopefully I didn't get anybody in like this in the place, or aren't people, it said, okay, even though I'm getting unemployment or whatever, they're just, every time I say, hey, you got any rent, they make a face at me or flip me off or something. And now, what happens on June 30th? I mean, on July 1st, I can wing them out, or July 1st, I start the process, or, I mean, I got to believe somebody along the line is going to say, must know that I'm hurting as bad as they are. They got to be giving me something. I mean, there can't just be that many. You're not getting a dime because I don't have to's around, are there, or are there?
Well, I think you got to at least get them over a 5-day notice, as you would if you were, if you had a tenancy where the tenant that overstayed and weren't paying rent, and you give them, time to cure it. But it's a matter of days, not weeks. And after that, assuming that the rent becomes due after June 30th, and you give notice that the rent hasn't been received, the proceedings are immediate, pretty much, and the relief is immediate too. And the law is heavily weighted in favor of landlords, as historically proved, necessary for it to be, for there to be property up, maintained and available for people who want to rent.
Well, doesn't Chicago have the reputation of being very tenant friendly?
Yeah, but not when it comes to eviction.
Okay.
As far as, maintaining heat and, safety and lead poisoning, all these things, there's this tremendous protection, the tenants can use against landlords. But when it comes to eviction, unless you can prove this, there's been some kind of, reason why you haven't been paying rent, so sort of a constructive eviction, and you're not bound anymore. Normally, that's really hard to prove, and the courts are pretty hostile to it. You've got to pay the rent. And if you don't pay the rent, the relief is immediate. So I think, unless they try to call into question the entire machinery and say that this has to be reevaluated in such extraordinary times, I think you're going to have a huge explosion of homeless people.
Well, then what is that? Most people, if you were just plain laid off, most people did, I won't say did as well in the unemployment, but a lot of people sort of did. A lot of people maybe didn't get that. I don't know. It's hard for me to gauge who and where. What do you see it on the corporate side or the business side? It's downtown where people haven't been here. It wasn't Jenner and Black. It was one of those guys that said, look, we couldn't go in the building. I couldn't get 1,000 people in there at, three person max in the elevators and all that stuff. Is all that stuff going to be litigated? These guys be waiting for their money for when? For years? Or are they all going to settle or what?
Oh, yeah. Attempts to collect, there'll be judgments filed and try to attach other property. It's going to be a long, drawn out process to get any money out of this. But I think the effect on possession will be pretty quick and severe. So, the money part will drag out, of course.
But once we, say you are the big attorney firm, and you, you know, you sent him his letter, and you dispute the fact that you had to pay him since last St. Patrick's Day. But come July 1st, when or whenever it is that Lori, you know, opens the place up or whatever she does, I mean, the place has to start paying like that day, don't they?
Yeah.
So they're going to fight about the year
suspension with the rent. So.
Yeah, but they're going to fight about the year. But I mean, by August 1st, people should. I mean, I don't. We're not in New York. We're saying they're opening stuff up. But by August 1st, people should be paying again. We hope.
Right. Right. By July 1st.
Yeah.
We would hope. But I just see, you know, think about a huge rental apartment building, a high-rise, you know, building in a, you know, expensive neighborhood. It's got to be flushed out of people.
Yeah.
I just wonder if there's any kind of long-term thinking about what this means for the long haul. Are these buildings viable anymore? If the economy is as fragile as the pandemic has proved it to be, are people going to want to invest in such properties? Is it make more sense to tear them down?
Well, my significant other, she comes on the show, Audrey, had a house this last weekend, Jen, and I haven't told you this. They got 22 bids over the listing price of the house. They had to filter through and then took one. And it's an area where
yeah,
22. You know, whatever. And she was there. She printed them all out, went through every single one with the owners, and they, you know, picked one, I guess. And Audrey's, you know, she's really good at what she does. There's no doubt about that. And she managed to have she had an open house with 40 groups came through. But now, these people are coming from someplace. It's not a zero-sum game. I mean, they're moving from somewhere, and if it's another home, they just want a bigger place. I mean, that's healthy, right? I mean, you get married, you have a kid, you need another bathroom, you buy it, and then somebody else who doesn't have a kid yet buys your old place. I mean, that's the way the world's supposed to work, right? But, I mean, where are these people coming from? Like Peoria?
I think from around Chicago. I remember Audrey saying several weeks ago, that, you know, a lot of her clientele was people who thought they were imprisoned in these high-rise buildings and would never go back to one.
Only because you wanted
a piece of graft or whatever. So I think it's a lot of city people, too, who are disillusioned with the experience of living in a high-density neighborhood.
Did
and bought a house, even if it's just a cottage, and it needs work.
That's did Lake Point Tower, this has to be, I'm not going to say dumb, because the timing is everything. The place was, it finally, after years of trying, they went condo, right? And then didn't somebody, a year ago, essentially buy the condo's back memory and turn it back into a rental?
Right, you converted it, right?
Could that possibly be the dumbest trade?
That could be the new trend. Sure that the loss is off of the condo market, and a lot of these buildings are going to go in the opposite direction. You have a lot more control over the whole building that way.
I know, but the people who sold it last week have to be happy as a clam. Thank you very much. SP Futures unchanged as if he was on 16. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
No either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.